You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. It's the all-in clear-out sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue S for 0% APR for 84 months, or get an up to $5,500 cash purchase bonus on select other models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
It's Mail It In Friday.
Yeah, hi, it's Bill Lumberg again. Yeah, it isn't a half day or anything like that.
This is Overdrive.
It's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care.
With Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour for the week. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. The O-Dog is down at the compound. He was here for the first 2 hours of the show, but he's on the panel tonight. So Leafs Jets on TSN 4 tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio. And I think he had hit a wall anyway. He did his combine workout earlier today, his pro day. He and Al's brother ran the 40, and they both did the vertical jump. And the numbers are staggering. Like, there's really no other way of putting it. They're staggering numbers. Al ran the 40 in 10.6, and Al's brother ran in 10.1. Al's brother put up a 17-inch vertical. To put that into perspective, guys at the combine or at the pro days are going over 40.
I was going to say, don't people do 42-inch verticals, like 40, you know, like...
Absolutely. Like, the best of the best. Now, these are, like the pinnacle athletes. You know, these are 21, 22-year-old kids, basically, in their prime, who are jumping 42, 43. But 17 for Al's brother, 13 for the O-Dog.
I'm going to, like, try something in my basement maybe tomorrow just to see what I could do. It is tougher than you think, but what do you measure it on? Like, you measure it trying to touch the highest on the wall? Like, I guess the highest.
That's the one thing. This is not an official... I think, you know, number here. This is not exactly scientific, because at the combine, what they have is you jump up and you hit.
Yeah, hit those things. Like, you hit, that, like, spin around.
Yeah, the
right?
blinds or whatever. And then that will directly tell you exactly how high you got. Jumping up a wall is difficult. To be fair to Al's brother and the O-Dog, you know, it's tough, because you're going up against a brick wall. You slip or something, you knock a couple of teeth out. That wouldn't exactly be prime athleticism.
I'm more concerned, like, I do not want them to run the 100. We'll have to have an ambulance kicking by. Like, you'll have to have something.
Paramedics.
Some form of paramedic there.
Yes.
Just in case. You blow a knee out, blow a back. You know, the heart rate gets too high. Whatever it is, it's not good. That would be my concern.
I'm with you on that. I don't support it. I'm with you. I don't support a 100-meter race between Al's brother and the O-Dog. I think it would be unhealthy. Well, it would be very healthy. It'd be unsafe. Could potentially be unsafe. So anyway, the videos are going up. We're going to post that on Instagram, on Twitter, everything. Al's brother is on it. And Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider, will join us here in a moment. We've been talking about Matt Martin fighting Zdeno Chara and how Chara at, what is he, 41 now?
Yeah.
Is still a guy who terrorizes the league. Like,
yeah.
Martin drops the glove and you could see it. He's like, this, what did I just do here? Like, we're going. Okay, but I got to get inside. I got to hold on for dear life. Like, no one's trying to win a fight against a guy who's 41 years old. You're just trying to not lose. You're trying to survive a fight. Yep. And I give full credit to Martin, full credit to Zdeno Chara. But he hasn't stopped the intensity, right? Like, at 41 years old, new team, he's jumping on a moving train and he has not slowed down at all.
And they had one of those nights where they gave up, what was it, 7 or 8 last night?
They gave up 8 last night.
Yeah, and Barzal went end-to-end, and Chara was on the ice. Like, you could see there was some frustration, but, you know, Washington's been a really good team this year. Like, they've been – that's a rare night. And they've had some bumps in the road, too. Like, we were talking about it earlier, Vancouver, how it's been, you know, pretty much a rough year for Vancouver, and now they're going to be shut down – I don't know how long for COVID. There's already some rescheduling of games going on. But, you know, Buffalo went through it. You know, Washington, Ovi and them, there was 4 of them that got clipped for 4 games, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, know, I think Boston has had several guys on the COVID list a couple different times. You know, Buffalo's been a disaster.
You know what's crazy is Colorado. Dallas was the first one.
Dallas, yeah.
And we forget about Dallas because, remember, it happened to them during camp. They didn't start their season for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And they missed like a lot of – I think they were out the first 19 days of the season or something like that before they even played a game.
I think there was – it was something ridiculous where there was 18 guys that had it. Like, the, yeah. like basically everyone had it. And I thought it was interesting – you know, we had Eric Staal on, was it a couple days ago? Everything blends together. But let's say we had him on 2 days ago. And O asked him, like, basically, what the hell went wrong there in Buffalo? And he kind of laid out and he was like, yeah, the guys had it. And some of them weren't doing so well.
Right.
That's the scary part. Like, you're hearing a few stories out of Vancouver. I think it was Adam Gaudette's wife or fiance went on Twitter, was like, leave him alone. Because people are, like, there's lunatic fans going, like, you gave the team COVID. Like,
I know, it's so
crazy.
It's so stupid. Don't we know enough a year into this?
Yeah,
you know, like
just,
don't we know enough that it's impossible to detect? Who knows how it
right.
got and, there? What happened?
And this is real life stuff. Like, the hockey,
yeah,
they'll
exactly.
figure it out. Like, this is real life stuff. Like, there's, you know, Travis Hamonic, you know, he opted out last year because, you know, I believe he has a daughter that has a, you know, respiratory situation.
And now he's got
sure.
it or tested
exactly.
positive. Yeah.
So it's scary.
No, you're right about that. And it actually, it's pretty amazing how many athletes have got it, you know, and how many
right.
young guys. And the majority of them, again, have come back and I guess you wouldn't even know it. Case in point, McDavid and Matthews had it.
Right.
Like they both had it. Matthews, it got out, it got reported, and then eventually yeah. he confirmed it. McDavid confirmed it on his own through his, I believe, through his agent or his publicist.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't know the way those two have been playing all year. You'd have no idea. But to your point, there are clearly things going on in Buffalo where guys had it and are struggling. Fred VanVleet just spoke about it 2 nights ago.
I know.
He's like, we're trying to get back in shape here. Like, it is not as easy as maybe you think just because we're a 25-year-old athlete doesn't
right.
mean that we can definitely overcome it. Jason Tatum spoke on this earlier in the year where he had it in Boston, and he just said, "I by the fourth quarter, I'm really struggling.
Yeah,
like, I just don't have the same energy that I generally would." And you're right, in terms of how that's going to affect teams like Buffalo, like Vancouver, like the Raptors. On top of it, they're having
right.
down years anyway.
Right.
You know, where
just
you've got
another thing.
Just
you know?
One more thing to overcome, where it's like, I don't feel great, and now I got to grind out the final 20 games that ultimately are meaningless. Like, if you're in Buffalo, you're not playing for anything. Really,
right.
you're not. Like, especially if you're on term. If you've got 3 years left on your deal or whatever, you're like, they can't get rid of me. I'm not
right.
going anywhere. And we're terrible. Like, no one's going
right.
to trade for me. I'm not going on waivers, and we're terrible. I'm literally just playing this out based on an obligation, based on a
yeah.
contractual obligation. Here's our TSN hockey insider, Pierre LeBrun. What kind of curveball do you think this could throw the league, Pierre, out in Vancouver in terms of scheduling and how this all plays out?
Yeah, it's huge. There's no question about it. I mean, the league has done an unbelievable job of the league schedule maker, Stephen Hatzepetros, of not scheduling any games past May 11th so far with all these changes. But, boy, it's right on the edge right now. It is right on the edge as far as what's going to happen here. And the reality is, I don't think the Canucks are playing next Thursday when you know, the statement yesterday said, you know, they might come back and play on April 8th. I don't think that's happening. So I just think, I mean, the updated list today had 7 Canucks players. It is actually 8 players, as we reported this morning. There was one name omitted, and they're going to update that here at some point. But so there's 8 players on the list. More testing done today. The results will be known later tonight, and who knows if we have to wait till tomorrow to find out what that means. But this is really the biggest concern you ever have when you start the season. Dallas had it to start the year, as we know, and to be honest, it's derailed their season from the get-go, right? I mean,
right.
they're trying valiantly to fight through it. I believe this week I was talking to someone in the Stars organization this week. This week was their 5th consecutive week where they played Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday.
Wow.
Five straight 4-game weeks. The Habs on Monday night, a game that we have on TSN Regional, the Habs on Monday night start the first of five consecutive weeks of four games a week.
Yikes.
So,
and I give them credit the way they've come out, Pierre. I said this earlier in the afternoon. I was surprised the way they played against Edmonton and Ottawa, and I give them full credit for that. But I am curious to see if they can keep it going. You know, if they can keep the energy level up, if they run into an injury or a goalie starts to struggle, that is a real grind, the amount of games that Montreal is about to play.
No question. And so there's a couple of things to chew on with that. They need to, and they've done it right out of the gates, as you said, they need to pile up the points over the next 2 weeks before it starts to hit them. So they need to, and, you know, they've put up a bit of space. I mean, they're actually third in the division right now on points percentage. But they need to keep piling it now while they have the energy, because it's going to hit them. I mean, at some point, there are going to be games where they just don't have it, and you're going to see when you watch it. The other thing to think about here is the Habs have a lot of bodies. With the acquisition of Eric Staal, the signing of Cole Caulfield, who at some point will, after playing some games in Laval, will get called up. Tyler Toffoli will be back from injury soon. Joel Armia should be back from the COVID list over the next week or two. They're going to have a lot of bodies. And so what I'm going to be fascinated by, because they have no cap room, they're right at the edge, is they're going to want to keep that depth as much as possible to get through this grind, to get through these next 5 weeks where they're playing, you know, four games a week. But the cap only allows so many things. And so I'm going to be fascinated by, A, do they end up, you know, creating some cap space before April 12th, which I think they are looking at right now because they have to, but at the same time, trying to keep as much depth around as possible. So that's going to be something to monitor with them, because I think they're going to need all hands on deck.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And you mentioned Cole Caulfield, and we talked about him earlier this week.
Yeah.
And he's a guy they took in the first round a couple of years ago. He scores the lights out. He shoots the lights out. He did with the American team. He did in college. He did at the juniors. And the expectation is, you know, he can be maybe a DeBrincat, who was doing that in Chicago, a smaller guy, right-handed shot, but can shoot the lights out. But when you consider what Bergevin has done over the past couple of years, going out there and getting Anderson, who's a right-winger, signing him to a seven-year deal, signing Toffoli long-term, a right-winger, giving Gallagher a long-term extension, a right-winger, how does this add up? Like, where does Caulfield come into play? Even Armia, who's been a good find for them as a bottom six, he plays generally on the right side. So what's going to happen here with this logjam on the right side of Montreal?
Well, you can't feel too great if you're Armia, because he's UFA.
Yeah, he's a UFA. I think he's gone. I agree.
But so, Caulfield's not on the fourth line either. Like, that's not a plan. None of those guys are.
Yeah, they're going to try, certainly, and they've tried that since the start of the year, but at times the third line has looked more like a third line. They're going to try and be a top nine team, probably truly offensively, for the first time in a long time when everyone's in their spot. And you know, the other big decision will be Deneau after the year, who's playing now finally like the Phil Deneau that we know after a real struggle early on. Like, I think the whole thing where they negotiated and he wasn't extended, and he saw how Petrie and Gallagher were extended, but he wasn't. And it is what it is. It's the business of hockey, but I think it affected him, really weighed on him. And he's up at the end of the year. You know, how do they replace him if they can't fit him under the cap? So that's another big thing. But, yeah, it'll be interesting with Caulfield. I mean, I don't think that my sense is, from talking to someone today, it's not like they've said, okay, here's X amount of games in the AHL and then we're calling you up. I do think they want to see how he fares in pro hockey for the first time before they call him up. But I think we'll see him. And the one thing that he can do, even though the learning curve is steep, is that he has the kind of natural offensive finish, I think, that the Habs don't really have. I mean, they got a lot of good players. They don't have any A to A plus finishers on that team. And that's what he brings. So I think they'll find a spot for him.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I just think Bergie's a guy, I think in a traditional situation, he would want him to play half a season in the AHL. He's got a little bit of Kenny Holland in him, a lot like what Kenny Holland did with Yamamoto. You know, is try and get him to the minors as much as possible, let him become a pro in his own right. But he may be forced basically on this situation, you know, because, you know, you're looking for players that can help your top nine. But ultimately, you know, it's not like you have the traditional season here. You know, like he's come out of college. Now he's 20. He's not 18. That's something that, you know, you look at. He might have a little bit more man strength to him than, you know, Kotkaniemi did when he first came over. Like Kotkaniemi's just starting to come into his body, if you ask me. A little bit more confident, a little bit more stronger in certain situations. You know, Caulfield's not a big guy, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how he adapts at this level. It's not as physical, but you are going to have to win loose puck battles. And Pierre, where I was going to go is, you know, Bergie always says I'm not doing anything, you know, phones off, all of this stuff. Like, do you, you know, when Berge talks like that, it's almost like he's going to do exactly opposite of what he's saying. Like, do you get the sense that maybe he has something up his sleeve or he's going to move somebody just to kind of give himself some relief? I know in reading, you know, Montreal Twitter, Lehkonen seems to be a guy who's on the outside and been a healthy scratch and that type of stuff.
Cost a shutout last night. You got to get him out of town.
Did you see that? Did you see Montreal Twitter going nuts on him?
Yeah, as if that really matters that much. Like Jake Allen, now he's Kent Dryden. You got to get it for him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that they want to deal him, but I think they may, if they're trying to create that cap space, they may have to. There's not that many options. No one's taking Paul Byron's contract with two more years on it.
Right.
So there's only so many things. And yes, I do think that ideally, now it's not a must. I mean, they can just do salary cap gymnastics for the rest of the year and it's going to be convoluted. I mean, heck, Vegas played with 10 forwards last night. It's not what you want. But I think ideally that's where the phone calls are right now for the Habs, is trying to find a partner to alleviate their cap room. They're not alone, by the way. There's a few teams doing that right now. So that's where that's at. And, you know, I just think at the end of the day, though, that to just wrap this up on the Habs, because I think Hayes is on to something. The Habs cannot go in the final 2 weeks chasing points. Like, if they're chasing points in the last week of April and the first week of May, they're not making the playoffs. They need to get to a point where it's like, if they play 500 hockey the last month of the season, it's enough for them to get in. And I don't think they're that far away from that if you look at the standings. But that's where they need to be, because it's just going to be, they're going to be zombie nights for that team over the course of time.
Sure. With Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. The Leafs are in action tonight, and Jack Campbell is playing, which is noted. I mean, you have to note that, because he's a guy that generally has not been capable of playing back-to-back games, even with the day off in between, based on his injury history. But he's going tonight. But the Freddie Anderson news is very difficult to get a read on, Pierre. Like, the longer this goes, the more pessimistic I become. The fact that he's getting more testing, the fact that he's not even on the ice, he's not going to join them on the trip, and we're under, 10 days away from the trade deadline for Dubas to know the answer as to whether he can rely on Freddie. And if he finds out that maybe he can't, how do you address it? Like, what's out there in terms of the goaltending market between now and the trade deadline if Dubas decides he has to do that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. I touched on it a bit in Insider Trading last night, but, you know, we don't have a lot of time to expand on that segment. In calling teams around the league, I get zero sense and you know, that the Leafs are calling around looking at goalies. So that's, you know, one step at a time. That's the first thing I was trying to figure out this week. But that doesn't mean that's not going to happen. And I think you kind of touched on it. What I'm being told from talking to a couple of people this week with knowledge of the Freddie Anderson situation is that he came back too early the first time. You know, Campbell was out, if you remember. Anderson came back. He should not have. And that produced a setback in his situation. What's happening now is that he wants to make sure that when he is back, well, we hope he's back, but I'm being told he will be back, that it's like 110%. Like, this is the extra, extra, extra careful route that's happening here with him, because he does not want to have another setback. And the person I spoke with said, you know, all signs point towards him when he is back, that he'll be back for good. Okay, that's fine. But to your point, until that happens, you still have to ask the question, right? And so I think that's probably what the Leafs are waiting for is, okay, when are we getting him back? And when he comes back, how is he? And if it looks good, then they're fine. Because I don't think the Leafs want to go out and get a goal. I think that if they are confident that Freddie Anderson comes back healthy and that they've got a 7-0 Jack Campbell, that they feel pretty good about their goaltending. Why shouldn't they with those two guys? But they need to feel good about their health collectively. And I don't know that they can ascertain that yet 100%, obviously. So, again, if they get any hesitation on the Anderson situation between now and April 12th, then you got to pick up the phone. And there's not that many options. I mean, it's not like, I mean, I get a kick out of some Leaf fans and reading social media, like, you know, go out and get another one. Okay.
Yeah, who is it? That's like, it, right?
You don't do that in season. Noodles actually helped me for a piece I wrote earlier in the week in The Athletic about how rare in-season goalie trades are for the top guys, anyway. Now, we had Leonard last year, and that worked out well for Vegas, but Ryan Miller in 2014 was still a top five goalie in the world and went to St. Louis, and it was a disaster. Not his fault, I'm just saying. Like, it's just hard. I think Noodles knows more than me, but you know, sometimes just talking about this out loud, but then seeing how it works in real life, not that easy to go in and plug in a goalie and saying, all right, lead us to the promised land in the middle of the year where you don't know anyone.
Well, okay. And you plug in another thing here, too. Frederik Andersen, like, he hasn't skated, I believe, since March 19th. So let's say he's off for over 2 weeks. He might be working out, staying in shape, eating properly, all of that stuff. That's the maintenance. But coming back, he's not skating once and starting a game. Like, he's going to have to, like, this is jumping on not just a moving train. This is a very fast moving train because we are in the best hockey right now. This is the stretch time. This is where systems are already in. Guys are at their, you know, kind of optimal peak of playing well. And, you know, he's got to get his timing up right away and jump on it. There's no guarantee that's going to just happen overnight. You're going to have to run him several games to get him comfortable.
Well, how do you have that conversation, Noodles? Because I think ultimately the MRI is going to factor in, the medical team is going to factor in terms of the information that Dubas is seeking out and Dubas is going to get. But if it comes down to a point where you have to go to Freddie Andersen and ask him legitimately, this is a guy who's a free agent at the end of the year. It's a guy that's very proud and a guy that wants to prove what he can do come playoff time. I don't think Freddie Anderson's going to say, go get someone. So how do you even ask him? Like, what is the point of asking him in a way when you feel like you're probably going to get an answer, give me a few more weeks, I'll be fine, where what if he's not? Like, it's ultimately a game of chicken in a weird way because he's not going to tell you I'm not going to get back to 100% and perform well.
Well, you would hope that there's that trust in that relationship that if he doesn't think he can go, he would tell you. I would hope.
It's
not
going. It's just, you know, do you think you – like, we're talking a team that thinks they can win a cup and fight for – and they need Freddie Andersen. And Freddie Anderson's in a very precarious position. He doesn't have a contract, right? He wants to prove himself down the stretch and in the playoffs. And at some point, you're going to have to ask him, like, do you think you can get back to 100%? And he's got to give you the answer. And then you have to decipher whether or not you're going to accept it or not, basically.
Yeah. I think there's a chance, like, if they believe medically he can get to 100%, then it's up to him. That's the trust that they go, hey, we're giving you the time off. We're giving you the medical treatment, everything that's needed. And right now Jack's playing well, so there's no rush to get back. We're managing the schedule. Now it's up to you. So that, you know, that becomes the relationship. They know what Freddie Anderson's capable of. This isn't his first year as a Leaf. That's, you know, they know
and
exactly.
And again, the tough part in all this is, I think people are having two different conversations too. I think people are having the one we just had. Other people, I think, are actually what they're really saying is they don't trust Michael Hutchinson at three. I don't mind Hutchinson at three myself, but he literally had to play in the playoffs with Colorado last year because Grubauer and Francouz were out. So I think there are some Leafs fans and observers who what they're really saying is, they're fine with Anderson and Campbell if they're healthy, but because of the health situation, they don't want to see Hutchinson in a playoff game. The three has to be upgraded. Okay, and I understand that, but let's just pull the name out of the hat. They go out and trade for Chris Reager from Florida. He's a, you know, terrific story, terrific year. He's a cheap cap hit.
Yeah.
Well, so because you don't want to lose him on waivers, I mean, are you you know, depending how far out in the deadline, I guess that's the other implication. But so where do you stash him when everyone's healthy? Are you carrying three goalies? Like, there's a lot of different things here to think about is what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
It's not as simple as it sounds. It's doable, but the optimum route, obviously, is to feel comfortable with where Anderson is.
Yeah. And, again, we won't find out anytime soon, or it doesn't sound that way anyway. We'll see. We'll leave it there. Have a great weekend, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Right on. Sounds great, guys. Okay, thanks for having me.
You got it. Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. Yeah, at some point, you know, you got to talk to Freddie, and Freddie's got to give you the answer. And listen, he's a pro. He's been here a long time. But I guess what I'm driving at is I think he understands the position he's in. Like, he's a proud guy. He wants to prove himself down the stretch and in the playoffs. He is a number one, and he wants to live like a number one. He wants to play. He wants to get in. And he's got a contract looming. He's a free agent at the end of the year. So, you know, it's a business in the end. And if you're Kyle Dubas or Sheldon Keefe, you ask him. You got to believe in it. But it's your job to make sure that you're covered, I guess is what I'm saying.
I agree.
And it's tough. It's a difficult conversation. It's complex, but it's one they have to be having right now.
Well, it is complex, and I think maybe it's a scenario where Pierre just hit on. You know, if you don't want to upgrade, and if there's not available, if you have any doubt that Freddie Anderson's might not be available, if he comes back and things are rolling and then he re-aggravates something or just not, and then Campbell, you're not sure. Maybe it is a situation where you look at the three hole and go, hey, I love Michael Hutchinson. I think Michael Hutchinson, this is the crazy part about it. This guy's been a hell of a trooper.
Like, he really
just goes
has.
In, you know what? Like, Campbell's all of a sudden, I'm not going tonight. Hutchinson's in. Like, we forget how hard that is. You know, here's a guy. Now, I'm not feeling sorry for him. He's at the National Hockey League level making $750. They signed him to a 2-year deal at $750. So even if he was on the taxi squad or playing in the AHL, he'd be making some good money. That's his job. But, you know, here's a guy they brought back. They're familiar with him. He's a fantastic person, and I think he can give you NHL minutes. It's not a perfect scenario, though, if Michael Hutchinson is trying to win you playoff games. And, again, I come back to it. Colorado is your template.
They went through it. They went through it last year.
Right in front of our eyes 6 months ago. So, you know, if you're Joe Sakic, I still believe. And Grubauer's had a fantastic season. He's a very good goaltender. But it drops off after that. Like, I think Colorado has to be looking for a goaltender in case Grubauer tweaks something. And here?
They're in a different spot with the Leafs if Campbell's healthy. Right?
If he's healthy.
He's your stopper. It is a big if, but I've been saying this for weeks now. If we're talking about a slight upgrade on your third string goalie, it's not ultimately going to make that big of a difference. Right. Maybe it's an extra win or two. Maybe it's a round, but your expectations fall off a cliff. You know, if we're talking about the guy in between Hutchinson and Campbell, then to me, it's just not going to make that much of a difference.
Although I was thinking about this. You know, Anton Hudobin wasn't a household name. I certainly knew who he was because he was.
But he was number two, like a really good number two.
He's a true number two, more like a 1-1A or 1A, but he's a two. I think he's a two that can give you 1 minute. Same with Yara Halak, guys like that. I don't think there's anybody out there. That's, to me, what Campbell is a good two that can give you 1A minutes.
Right.
That's what I see him as.
Yep.
So there you've got your guy. You've got your guy like that. He just needs to be healthy. So he's playing tonight. Let's see if he's stringed together some games, and we're not even talking about injury status.
Yep, that's the hope. Absolutely. We'll continue to tee up the game tonight. Leafs-Jets tonight. Raptors back home down in Tampa taking on Golden State. We'll tee that up as well. And the Jays back in action tomorrow afternoon. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Now, back to Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog.
We like to. Yeah.
All right, so the Overdrive Pro Day took place earlier this afternoon. The O-Dog going up against Al's brother, the 40-yard dash. It has gone viral, and it's not gonna slow down. There's a lot of reaction to Al's brother, who ran it in a decent time, 10.1. Not bad. He started in the three-point stance, too, which I love. Just a nose tackle breaking through the line.
Just gritty.
Yeah.
I love it.
As gritty as it gets. And the O-Dog ran a 10-6. But he's got a bad shoulder. You got to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
I
think the shoulder's a long way from the legs, though. I will say that. It's on TSN.ca. I don't know if somebody has clipped it, but I promise you there are going to be some amazing memes. Like, what is the meme that you always – remember when it a goalie got hurt and you said Noodles heading to the Leafs dressing room?
Oh, the Ultimate Warrior meme.
Ultimate Warrior.
Yes, the Warrior
like him
meme.
Running down, yeah, the Warrior meme. Like, there is going to be, you know – O-Dog running beside the Ultimate Warrior.
But it's like, got to be for the complete opposite reason, like the last thing you want to do. You know, like you're getting called into work on a weekend.
Exactly.
Here's the O-Dog, or Al's brother for that matter. Although I guess, again, it's got to be the O-Dog. We just saw it up on TSN 2. And Al's brother, he does not run in a straight line. Like, that's the most amazing thing. If you're listening to this on radio, you're going to find it. It's everywhere. It's up on TSN.ca. It'll be on Instagram, Twitter. He's running at the camera, but it's nowhere close to a direct line. I think it costs him a lot of seconds. And by the end of it, his legs are not bending. Al's brother's legs are not bending. But
Forrest Gump.
Absolutely. And I hope – is Al's brother close to a mic? Because it's been a couple of hours since we had him on, and it's been, I believe, about 4 hours since he made this run. And they did the vertical jump, too. Al's brother jumped at 17 inches, and the O-Dog was at 13 inches. If we could bring Al's brother in at some point here, because I want to hear how his body is holding up. How are you feeling, Al's brother, about 3 or 4 hours post-run?
My legs are a little sore, I'm not going to lie, because I did a couple of practice jumps earlier in the day for the vert. And so I think a couple of those, that may have also hindered my run time because my legs weren't 100% because of it.
Yes.
So, yeah, I could feel a slight burn in the quads.
Were you, like, to me, watching the tape, it doesn't look like you're running in a straight line. Is that true? Is that an accurate analysis or what?
I mean, the tape don't lie, right? I guess the tape doesn't lie on that
no,
one. I didn't feel like I was running, you know, not straight, but apparently, I don't know how to run the straight line.
I love that.
I did the dip at the end. You see that?
I love it. The dip
at the,
I just saw it. Someone pointed it out to me earlier, but I didn't catch it the first 10 times I've seen it. That is clutch. Like, that's, you probably picked up a millisecond minimum.
Yeah.
Well, I had to beat O. I think if I didn't do the dip, I may not have beaten O.
I think you're right. I mean, that's got to be pretty gratifying. The O-Dog was a professional athlete, played in the league for over 800 games. And
dip.
You beat him in the vert and in the 40-yard dash.
Yeah. I was surprised about the 40. His shoulder, I think, I don't know if he can really jump that high because it may hurt on the way down. That's
right.
I was feeling good about the vert. Yeah, there it is right there.
Incredible.
The 40, though, I did not expect to win that one at all. Like I said, it has been years since I've run that way, at least sober, that's for sure.
Well, nobody runs, you know, like who goes
right.
for a sprint? Like Noodles, you run all the time, but you don't sprint. Like, what's the point of a sprint?
Yeah, I used to like to go for a run 40 minutes every day, and I can't anymore, my back, so I elliptical or bike and that, but I loved it just for the mind, just get out and run. But I can't remember the last time I've actually sprinted.
Like, me neither.
Ran.
Me neither.
I haven't been in a race in forever. I don't even know, like, high school, I think I was in on the track team once.
I was in track when I was growing up, not in high school. By the time I got to high school, like, other guys had blown past me in terms of speed. But in elementary school, I was always on it because I was an athletic kid. And I thought I was pretty fast. But now, like, it is really – I'm with you. I don't think I've actually sprinted. Like a sprint in at least a decade, if not more than that. There was no reason for me to try it.
We've sprinted in our house. As a parent,
chasing
like,
your kid around.
I've heard a thud.
Yes.
And a kid cry, and I've run into the room going, okay, what am I dealing with here? Like, that's the only, but that's what, a 10 meter sprint? You're never far from your kid. And, you know, But I can't remember the last time I've actually had to haul ass down a road or anything for any reason.
You should give it a go. I mean, just go out there, measure out 40 yards, you know, down your roadway, and then just give it a run, let it videotape, and then on Monday we could see what you guys look like.
I will say this. The greatest tweet I've seen so far for the reaction was one guy just wrote, "How steep is the hill they were running up?"
All right. Here's actually a funny. So the hill's not steep, but right. We did specifically run in that direction because the other way was going against the wind. I was like, no. We are definitely running with the wind.
Oh my lord!
So you had wind behind you.
Sadly, yeah, we had wind behind us as well, and we still couldn't break 10.
I be honest, Al's brother, a full 100 meter. What do you think you could clock in at?
Well, because, I mean, you used to have to do the 100 meter back in elementary school.
Right.
So I'm trying to think at what I ran it back then. I believe I was roughly like, you know, early 20s, like 22 seconds
that
or so.
That sounds about right.
I mean, I wasn't as husky as a dude back then, so I was a little more agile probably. But
yeah.
I could definitely do under 30. I think probably around 25 might be 25 seconds. We'll see.
Okay. Okay. I like it. I mean, we'll get to that point at you know, some point in time. We'll see what happens. If we can set it up, we can get to a track. They're all vacant at this point, I would assume.
Yeah.
We can get out there. We can find one. And
they,
we'll all
partake.
Are
they closed, too? Like, are parks closed, too? Do you remember early on in the lockdown, like, kids couldn't go to a park because they were locked down? Like,
They were tarped off, like police tape.
Right. Remember there was, like, people that wanted to go shoot hoops and stuff, and they were, like, you know, having interactions with police officers because they're like, this is closed down.
Yeah.
Is that the case in the lockdown
not
starting
anymore.
Tomorrow?
No,
I don't
no,
think
it's
so,
not
right?
anymore. Like, because I think we've learned that. I mean, being outside, you got to get outside, and no one's, you know, no one's getting anything from riding a slide at a park or whatever.
I did notice that golfing is still a go.
It really is incredible.
Isn't that funny?
I was texting with Kara, I think it was, yesterday.
Yeah.
And I just said, hey, we can still golf. Like, I can't make sense of it. I approve of it. I like it. And it, not just from a selfish standpoint. I mean, I think you need to encourage people to get outside, be active, and, you know, do what you're going to do and don't gather inside, I think should be the primary message. It's very convoluted at this point. But with everything else that is wiped out and cleared out and what's available and what isn't, the fact that you can still tee it up is actually pretty incredible. And I referenced that video I saw on CP24. It's gone viral. Like all these different golf sites on Instagram. I was on Instagram earlier today. Some guy at Don Valley. And if you play Don Valley, I don't know if you have, Ellis brother.
No.
So you start up top, like you're up kind of on up by the clubhouse or up by the pro shop, and your first tee shot is into the valley. And it's actually a really cool first hole. It's a short par four, but it's a cool first tee shot. But it's intimidating because there's a lot of people always waiting around, waiting to get to the tee box. And I guess the CP24 camera was there and shooting this guy live. And he topped it. Like, it was like a terrible drive. And you could tell he was trying to come out of his shoes.
Yeah. Being a
hit
hero,
this thing like John Rahm. And we should try to get this guy on. If anyone knows who that guy was at Don Valley this morning, when CP24 caught it, we got to interview this guy because he must have been so embarrassed. And the question becomes, can you hit a breakfast ball if you're on camera and the whole city of Toronto is witnessing you do what you just did? I think he should be granted that. But
he might be like a scratch golfer. I mean, he might be a 7 or something like that
be.
And just had, you know, the yips or the stage
fright. We've all done it.
Right?
We've all done it. I did it at Weston last year. Always taping me. I took like a 6-inch divot out of the ground on a drive. I barely got the ball off the tee box. It was pathetic. And he taped it and he posted it, and I took a lot of heat for it, as I should. But, you know, I'm not a scratch golfer, but I'm not bad. I can get off a tee.
But I would feel extra nerves around O. Like, I feel like he's watching and judging, and the head shake comes out. I really would feel like that.
I was nervous.
Based on what I've heard from you guys when you're playing with O, he's like a no-nonsense golfer. I remember when he did his thing with Dubas and stuff. You would expect a little more trash talking, but he was just trying to win that game.
Yeah, he's all business in golf. Like, he just wants to play, and that's fine. But what was difficult for me that day was I was playing with two guys on top of O that were better than O. And O was like a 3 handicap that I've seen him shoot 68. We played wooden sticks. He shot 68 or 69. Like, that's how good he is. And there were two guys who were better than him.
Wow.
And then here I am, like, blatantly the fourth wheel, a plug who would prefer to play from the forward tees, picking up balls, taking breakfast balls. And I was legitimately nervous because he gave me the pep talk. He's like, these guys are really good, so pick up your game. Like, thanks, man. That's what I need. I'm already nervous to begin with because I'm not as good as you three. I don't need you giving me the pep talk that I better be on my game.
Well, and like, how awful would you feel if he was like, just pick your ball up? Like, you know, and
he's done that to me before. He did that to me when we played with Donnie Nichols from we played a good one. And on a 18, it's the 18th green. Like, who cares? We're leaving in 5 minutes.
Let's pick it up, buds.
He's like, just end it. Like,
just pick it up, buds.
Just pick it up, buds.
So he wasn't on the 13th. It was over anyway.
It was over anyway. There's no one out there. It was in the morning. It was like we weren't on the air for 4 or 5 hours. We had a ton of time. And, he said just pick it up. So – anyway, well, thanks for being a good sport, brother. That was great, man. That was good stuff. You guys are rocking out there earlier today. And Owen Noodles, we'll get involved as well. Myself and Noodles will get involved at some point.
Yeah, we'll have to do something.
Yeah, we'll add to this combine. And
get the grappler involved.
Grappler's sneaky.
Grappler's
athletic.
A mutant, though.
Like, I know. He's got long legs.
6'6". How tall is the grappler? He's like 6'5"?
He's at least 6'4", anyway. Yeah, I'll bet you he can. I'll bet you he can motor. I'll bet you when he gets rocking, I'll bet you he'd run this in –
Under 8 seconds, for sure.
I think sub 6.
Maybe.
To be honest. I looked it up. Average offensive lineman run about a 5.3 going in the combine. It's about a 5.3 for an offensive lineman. So I think Grappler could probably go around that, if not like a 5.6, 5.7-ish. Definitely think sub 6.
I hope so. Good for the Grappler. We'll put him to the test. We'll make it happen. all right, we'll come back and tee up the Leaf game, the Raptor game, the Jays weekend down at Yankee Stadium as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, the Leafs in action tonight in Winnipeg. Take it on the Jets. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio. Watch it on TSN 4 tonight. The Raptors in action as well. And the Jays with an off day today. I'm looking forward to the weekend. I cannot wait to see what they have in store tomorrow, Sunday. If you can walk out of Yankee Stadium with 2 out of 3, right? Just get a split tomorrow. And Sunday, take one of the next two games. You leave New York with 2 of 3. You're laughing, man. And you head down to Texas and the Rangers. Not a great team. You could take advantage of that scenario. Packed barn, packed house. And get back to Dunedin. All of a sudden, Springer comes off the IL. Maybe Robbie Ray is available for you. Nate Pearson. And we had Ross Atkins on in the 4 p.m. hour. And he said that was gratifying yesterday. You know, it's not an overreaction like we were trying to get him to say. But when you've got Cole on the mound at Yankee Stadium, you're not a full lineup based on injuries, and you still walk away with a 3-2 win. You're happy about that.
You'll take it, and you're right, overreaction or not. You know, I just thought it was weird. Like, day off after. Like, how often, how rare is that? Like, you play one game and day off. Usually they get one day off a month.
Well, now, starting tomorrow, they run off, I want to say, like 12 or 13 days in a row.
Right.
They're playing. So,
right.
Yeah, you get generally 18 days off a year, give or take.
Right. And
you don't get a lot. I mean, they do that historically in baseball. It's always been weird. I've never understood it, why you have opening day off, and then you wrap up the series. They've done that forever. Doesn't happen every single year. But kind of pumps the brakes a little bit based on the way you felt coming out of that game yesterday. But it'll pick back up tomorrow afternoon. And the Leafs are in action tonight, and I believe they're still playing Calgary on Sunday night.
Yeah, right? Sounds like it. I mean, Calgary's playing Edmonton tonight. That was my main concern, is if anybody in the Flames got infected in Vancouver the other day.
Right.
Because Vancouver shut down. Now all of a sudden the Flames play Edmonton tonight. They play the Leafs, Sunday, Monday. So that could spread right through the league if you're not careful.
It really can. Know? Yep. I mean, we've been through this in Montreal a couple of weeks ago. Like, for the longest time, we were looking south of the border thinking, okay, Dallas, Buffalo, Boston, Jersey, teams dealing with it, not up here. And now it's up here. And the Montreal Canadiens went through it. Vancouver's going through it now. Who knows when they'll be back on the ice. And you knock on wood. You know, hopefully everyone stays safe and everyone's healthy and you get back and you wrap up a season and move on from there.
Yeah.
But we'll see. So the Leafs in action tonight, Sunday night. In Calgary, the Jays have two more against New York, and the Raptors are in action tonight as well with Golden State in town, and Steph Curry will not play. So they are favored in Vegas, just like they were in Detroit, like they were in Oklahoma City. I'm not sure it's going to matter, but Lowry not going tonight, Steph not going tonight either. It's been a fun show today. You can find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca. subscribe and check us out on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you download your podcast, and set your PVRs on TSN4 and TSN2. If you can't watch it live, you can watch it later. We're out of here. Have a great weekend. We are back Monday at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. It's the all-in clear-out sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue S for 0% APR for 84 months, or get an up to $5,500 cash purchase bonus on select other models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.